Full Contact Fighter Radio Network, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Now, from Vancouver, British Columbia, here is your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Okay, well, here we are, the second episode of Full Contact Fighter Radio. Brendan, we made it. We made it past the first episode. We didn't get canceled yet.
Unbelievable, Kelsey. We've far surpassed my expectations then.
I know, I agree. You know, two Canadian dudes talking MMA. Second episode, who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
Well, let's not get cocky, though. It's...
So, yeah, let's how about we push on past our pontificating onto some MMA. We have lots to talk about today.
Yeah, we have a cram-packed show today. You're absolutely right. We're going to be talking to Mark Hominick here in a couple minutes, and then I also have an interview done with Rashad Evans. Unfortunately, Brendan couldn't do that with me. He had duties elsewhere, but for sure, man, you're absolutely right. So let's get into it. Ultimate Fight Night, of course, the hot button topic the last couple of days has been some controversial judges' decisions. One judge, Dalby Shirley, called Rashad Evans' Stephen Bonner fight a draw, and that has risen the ire of many an MMA fan. Brendan, your thoughts?
Well, you know a little bit more about the judging system, and I guess a lot of people don't realize a lot of the criticisms are aimed sometimes towards the UFC. But what we have to realize is that anytime a fight is sanctioned in Nevada or California or anywhere else, that there's a state athletic commission. It's actually the athletic commission that's in charge of doing the weigh-ins and finding judges and training judges and so on and so forth. So, in a sense, it's out of the hands of any particular organization who actually judges their fight. So it's what we're seeing is, I think, a lot of judges who aren't either used to MMA or come with a different set of eyes or a different set of values from boxing or something like that. So I think that leads inevitably to a lot of frustration.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, I don't follow boxing intensely. I am a fan, but I don't follow it as much. I for sure wouldn't call myself a boxing expert. But judging from the conversations I've had with people and the reading I've done the last couple of days, apparently Dalby Shirley is not exactly a fan favorite for even the boxing decisions and fights that they've he's judged either. So apparently, you know, it's to no one's surprise that when you consider mixed martial arts and, you know, perhaps the fact that some of these judges aren't very educated in mixed martial arts, that you get some decisions that don't really add up.
What I'm mostly interested in is, you know, having a level playing field and having everyone know what the criteria are when they go in, and so that judges can be judged themselves. You know, so there should be a system put in place or a mechanism that judges themselves can be evaluated. And all sorts of officials in every professional league are evaluated, in terms of strict criteria and their performance. And who knows, every time you judge something, it's subjective. What surprises me, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with necessarily having a draw in a fight or in a round, and I'm actually surprised that in MMA you see very, very few draws. You hear about them now and again, but I would actually like to see more draws, because that would push fighters to finish even more than a decision loss.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and I think that's part of the reason, that people get frustrated is not so much, I mean, obviously in this case, when we're referring to Rashad Evans, Stephen Bonner, you know, it's obvious that Rashad had the fight won, but then it can flip the other side, too, where someone wins the fight and they don't get the decision, and luckily for Rashad, he did. So I think that's why, you know, people get upset, and you and I have talked about this before, that, you know, there's a couple fights that are memorable and you just kind of scratch your head and you wonder, well, you know, how did that person win? And I just think that basically when it comes to these guys who are mostly just known for boxing, they don't necessarily have a clear understanding of wrestling and takedowns and groundwork. And I'm assuming that was the situation here, that this judge just apparently, you know, didn't understand that Rashad was dominating the fight from start to finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, the fights that we saw in Ultimate Fight Night were clear examples of sort of inappropriate judging. But if you had to think hard about other fights that we've seen this year, you know, the one that pops into my mind is probably St. Pierre, BJ Penn. Would anyone have lost any sleep if that fight would have been considered a draw? You know, and what, you know, every fight, obviously someone's going to do something. There could be a takedown difference, but if that doesn't turn into anything, does that mean the fighter should win the fight? You know, I think draws should be more liberally handed out, and that would set up a second fight. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't lose any sleep, although I agree if you had to make a decision to win or lose, St. Pierre certainly won the fight, but I wouldn't have lost any sleep. It would have been declared a draw either.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, I think generally speaking, fighters and fans want to see an exciting fight, and they want to see the fight end, you know, so that there's no doubts left in anyone's mind. And, you know, I guess I can see what you're saying, that if you start having some draws, then maybe fighters start thinking, hey, you know, even more reason not to let it go the distance, because it's completely unpredictable what's going to happen, or at least that's the case right now.
Mm-hmm. So what was your impression of the fights overall?
Well, we talked, I think, in the first show a little bit about the Chris Lieben Anderson Silva fight, and, you know, we both kind of expected Chris to take the fight to the ground. You know, he's shown some decent wrestling capabilities. And what I think, and I could be wrong, but what I think is that he must have determined in his mind that he could hang with Anderson for a little bit, at least endure a couple good shots and sort of see how it felt. And obviously that game plan was wrong. You know, Chris is known
it's clear in my mind now that having a solid chin is not a good offensive weapon.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say.
I think I was actually dumbfounded about Lieben's strategy, especially since Silva has shown his ground to be at least he's shown to be susceptible to submissions. Mm-hmm. You know, the old saying goes, you dance with the one what brung you. So
yeah.
For a Team Quest / Matt Hume, AMC Pancration fighter, not to want to take someone down when it's clearly in their best interest is it puzzles me, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I think. I'm wrong, and I could be wrong, and I often am, but I think that that's what Chris thought. I think, and if he alluded to it a little bit in his pre-fight interviews, the fact that he's got a great chin, and I think that he just thought, you know what, I'll stand here for a bit. If I get rocked, you know, it won't be anything too considerable, so I'll still be able to make the proper adjustments. And obviously, when you're going against a world-class striker like Anderson, and if he tags you with a couple good shots, regardless of your chin, you're not going to have time to recover. And Chris did, and he got walloped.
I think what you saw with Silva that you often don't see in MMA is oftentimes in MMA when someone gets rocked, they're rocked with a good straight hard shot or a looping punch or something like that. What you and fighters are used to that. They go down or they take a shot and have time to recover. What you saw with Silva was what they drill in Muay Thai over and over and over again. You know, Silva put together combinations which, you know, don't rock you, they finish you, because they're purposely meant to do exactly that, you know, and he was hit numerous times from many different angles, and he wasn't simply rocked, but he was dismantled, you know, and I think Silva's game plan unfolded perfectly, and I don't think enough MMA fighters, you know, especially up-and-comers, are used to being hit like that in so many times in combination.
Yeah, and, you know, I've seen some criticism, already read some criticism of Chris Lieben, and people saying, you know, the whole hype has been revealed to be false. And you know what? Hey, you know, most people said that if the fight was standing, Anderson was going to take him out, and a lot of people had Anderson Silva favored. And you know what? Lieben will be back. You know, he's still young. He still has time to work on his game and kind of work with his best assets and come forth and you know, Anderson is a world-class fighter. I mean, this guy is incredible. Some of the guys that he's fought, you know, he's got a couple losses to Kase. It was a disappointing loss for him, and I think some people kind of forgot about the fact that this guy is one of the world's best middleweights. And for any UFC fans out there, I mean, we're lucky that hopefully he'll have a shot at Franklin, and that should be an interesting fight.
And this is going to be, I think, a real gut check for Lieben as well. You know, he proved again he demonstrated on the show a slight amount of, I don't want to say mental weakness, but susceptibility to being rocked mentally. You know, it's being upset by situations. And, you know, every great fighter in their career is going to have a time where, you know, it will be a real gut check, and they'll have to decide, you know, is this the time where I dig down deep? And he certainly has access to the greatest tutelage out there in both of his Team Quest mentors and with Matt Hume. And we'll see. You know, it's his decision. Now, he's certainly capable of digging down deep and rising to the next level. And maybe now, you know, everyone needs a point in their life when they recognize that, you know, you can't listen to people who blow sunshine up your ass day in and day out. I'm not saying that his trainers do, but certainly, you know, if you ever have the misfortune, if you're a fighter, to read the forums, you know, you can't help but be influenced by what people say about you.
Absolutely. And, I do agree with some of the critics that say, you know, look, this is the fact that some of the guys that are coming out of the Ultimate Fighter aren't world-class fighters, and people have to remember that. And, you know, indeed, that's very much the case. But I would say that Chris Leben, in my opinion, of the people who have come out of the Ultimate Fighter, is one of the better fighters that's come out of that crop. And, you know, he'll be back. And, you know, we've also got another fight we're going to talk about, a little bit of controversy from some people's point of view, with Mark Hominek and George Jurgel. And we'll talk to Mark about that right away. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio Network. By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing Full Contact Fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fightwear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets, to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic Full Contact Fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a Full Contact Fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Glorious, huh? Ain't nobody can bang with us. Rascals checkmate, calling down the thrust. Shot clear, coming down with the northern touch. Yo, why you people wanna bang with us? Ain't nobody can hang with us. Rascals checkmate, calling down.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network. And now, from his upscale 300-square-foot igloo in the trendy Icefield district of Vancouver, British Columbia, he knows what he's talking about. Here's your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Okay, well, welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. On the line now is Mr. Mark Hominek from Las Vegas. Mark, how you doing, man?
Oh, we're doing well right now. We're just partying up in Vegas, having a great time.
Yeah, well, you have definitely reason to celebrate. Congrats on the fight last night, man.
Oh, thank you.
Now, obviously, it's a big win for you, rebounding off that loss to Hioki at TKO a couple months ago. Where does this rank as far as wins in your career? I mean, beating a big name guy like Jurgel, where does this rank for you in your career so far?
You know, this is a big win for sure, because like you said, coming off a loss, I knew I had to come back strong, because I was basically coming off the biggest win of my career and then followed by the biggest loss of my career. So I had to really solidify the type of fighter I am by winning last night.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mark, how prevalent was that loss to Hioki on the ground, especially? You lost by triangle choke at TKO. So how was that weighing heavy on your mind when you're fighting Gurgel, another great ground fighter last night? It certainly evident to everyone that you didn't want to go to the ground, and even didn't follow him to the ground after you had some of those very nice Thai sweeps, kicking his leg out from underneath him. How heavily was that loss weighing on your mind when you made your game plan?
Well, exactly. When I fought Hioki, I think I was maybe a little bit too overconfident in my ground skills, and I just, you know, I did not stick to any game plan that we set forth. I just kind of, you know, I grappled the grappler and made, like, the biggest mistake. So I just knew, you know, if I was going to win this fight, I had to be smart, and I had to, you know, play my game plan, stay on the outside, work in combinations.
Now, with the fight last night, Mark, you know, it looked to me, and I think most people would score it this way, and obviously the judges did, because you were getting the better of the stand-up exchanges. Were you somewhat surprised? I mean, obviously, George, you know, he tried to take you down a couple times. What were your thoughts on his stand-up game? Was it what you expected?
His game was a lot tighter than I thought. You know, any of the other fights that I've seen, he's somewhat wild with his punches and really wide, but he was very tight with his punches, like good 1-2s. And his kicks were pretty hard too. Like I was very surprised in that. His stand-up game's really come a long way. And were you surprised that he actually didn't try and take you down a little bit more? He had some attempts that actually looked fairly vain. Were you surprised that he wasn't more aggressive in trying to take you down? Yeah, I think he just got in that comfort mode and just, you know, kept with the stand up with the odd shot in. But, you know, I barked a couple of takedowns and maybe deterred him that way. But yeah, he kind of went on autopilot and stayed the stand up game the whole time, which was great for my game plan.
Yeah, Mark. I mean, obviously, us fans up here in Canada, we're very well familiar with you and Team Tompkins and your successes in TKO, and then of course the big win over Yves Edwards at your UFC debut, and everyone across MMA world is pretty much talking about how you set that up with the liver shot to Yves and then the punishing body shots. Last night I saw you go for that, you know, some body shots a couple times, and it looked like George was wincing a few times. Was that in your mind again, like trying to set it up, or did you get the feeling that he was maybe expecting you to go to the body a little bit?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think the body shots are like one of the most underutilized strikes in MMA. Like, no one hits the body. Everyone always goes to the head, like punch you to the head. But if you land like a good body shot with some small gloves, you can do a lot of damage and really slow down the pace of the fight for, you know, your opponent. That's always been Bas Rutten's contention as well, that no one
exactly
goes to the body enough. What do you think now? You've solidified yourself a nice little space at 155, and it seems like there was a great deal of excitement with the 155 class opening up again this year, and now in the over the course of a couple months, it seems to be one of the tightest divisions, perhaps even tighter than 170. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, you could name down 20 opponents, and I would say, you know, that'd be a tough fight. Like, this division is absolutely stacked.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, like I'm fighting at 155 in the UFC because, you know, I have to, because there's no division otherwise. So, you know, I'm just going to keep asking, and hopefully they will bring the 145 division. Like, that's my dream right now.
Yeah, that just leads right into my next question. I mean, I thought personally that you looked, you know, even more comfortable, and I mean, you're renowned for your conditioning, but I thought you looked more comfortable this time at 155. Was it easier this time around going up to 155? Did you feel your body settling into it a bit, or would you?
Yeah, much easier. Because last time with Yves, I only had about 5 weeks to prepare, so I didn't have a lot of time to put on weight. Like, it was just like, you know, hard training, and when you're that close to the fight, you're just working on conditioning and getting ready for the fight. It's hard to put on extra weight. So I had a little bit more time, and you know, I had a supplement sponsor, so that helped me out a lot too, like getting my weight up. So yeah, like I was, you know, walking a little heavier this time, which was great.
Yeah.
As a natural 145er, how is it that you've never faced Ivan Menjivar, the other Canadian, the other infamous Canadian 145er?
Well, because I was always fighting in TKO, and the promoter for TKO and Ivan, they weren't really dealing with each other at that time, the time that I did have my title reign. So now he's coming back, and there's two top Canadian fighters, and we both want to fight international competition. So I think it was just a matter of timing, you know. The time that we would have fought, he wasn't fighting in an organization, and now we're both fighting international fighters.
Yeah, and I've talked to Ivan, I've interviewed him a couple times, and he's made those comments similar to you. You know, people would like to see that fight, but right now, you know, he's kind of said exactly what you just said, that your guys are, he's more looking at the international competition rather than beating up other Canadians. You know, he mentioned you, he mentioned Ryan Diaz, who you had two great fights with. Now,
yeah, like there's
so many international fighters that like to fight, and you know, I never called any opponent. It's just whoever people want to see me fight. So, you know, right now the international stage is there, and I'd love to fight that competition.
Now, just going back to last night, real quickly, if we can, you know, going into the third round, you know, you were ahead, and things got a little scrambly for you in the third. It looked like, you know, he a couple times you were running to get away from him, and you know, afterwards there was a few boos. Did that really affect you at all? I mean, you know, I think there was obviously people cheering and people that are really happy to see you come away with the win. Did that affect you at all? I mean, Rogan alluded to it in the post-fight interview, the fact that some of the crowd disagreed with the judge's decision.
No, I thought I won that fight, no question about it. And, you know, George had a lot of fans there, too.
Yeah.
So I think those are the people who are booing. But the fans were cheering when the fight was on, so that's all that matters to me, really.
Right.
You know, after that, like, any judge's decision is going to be questioned, or, you know, everyone sees it a different way. So, you know, just whatever the fights fall, I guess.
Different fighters seem to have different reactions to the crowd. Are you even cognizant of the crowd when you're fighting, or do you fight in a zone? Are you aware of what's going around?
Yeah, what's going on around you? Like, I don't really hear the crowd at all. I hear my corner, and that's pretty much it. Like, everything, I feel like I'm, you know, enclosed in that box when I'm fighting. I don't get, you know, sidetracked by the crowd.
Now, you know, it's not like you usually set up everything with punches. Joe Rogan talked to you about the fact that you didn't throw a lot of kicks, and you kind of answered that question last night. But for those people that maybe didn't get a chance to see the fights last night and see your interview with Rogan afterwards, just for some of the listeners out there right now, maybe explain again why you didn't throw. You decided not to throw as many kicks against Yergel.
Well, I didn't. I found out like early in my career when I threw a lot of leg kicks, I got taken down a lot more. So I think I should have kicked a bit more, but I was really comfortable with my hands keeping at distance, and I could, you know, get my underhooks and stall effectively just with my hands. So I was really worried about the takedown, so I was just using my hands.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about Team Tompkins? You guys have had some really noted success late, and again last night, two wins. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the team and how long you've been together, and who the core of the team is, and who your mentors are there?
Okay. Well, Sean's the you know, the mastermind behind everything, and we, you know, our team started to come together about 6 years ago when I started training with Sean, and we were primarily a kickboxing school back then, and then we got into the UCC and TKO. And then we started doing more MMA. We started bringing in more help with, you know, Jeff Kern's Jiu-Jitsu team. And the team's just evolved from that. And now I think we have the best stable of fighters in Canada right now. Very strong team that, you know, very close. Everyone's there to help each other. We're good fighters in almost every division.
Yeah.
Is there a dark horse at Team Tompkins right now that we should be looking out for on the horizon?
I'd say Aaron Trigger. He's a 170-pound fighter. He's kind of been, you know, under the radar. He came out. He lost to Kyle Sanford early in his career. He's just, you know, come so, you know, big change in his training style and, you know, his effectiveness in the ring. He's an amazing fighter. You're gonna watch for him down the road.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with Sam losing to Kenny Florian, and then you guys rebound so nicely last night with your big win, and then Rob's big win, and I mean, that's got to be a big booster for the team, because, you know, obviously your win was huge, but for someone like Rob McDonald, who I think some people, you know, he was kind of under the radar a little bit for this fight, and
yep.
You know, to give him credit, against a tough guy, he comes away with the win.
Well, Rob, he went back to the drawing board after his loss, or his two losses on the Ultimate Fighter and in the pay-per-view, and he's completely changed. Like, you know, he started just training a lot of jiu-jitsu. He was kind of in that, just training wrestling and stuck in that mode, and now he's kind of, you know, accepted the fact that, you know, he's got to start training every aspect of the game to get better, and he showed last night with his submission win. It was great.
Yeah,
I have to ask you this question on behalf of anyone who's ever received a speeding ticket or a jaywalking fine. Is it nice to go in there and train and deliver some deadly leg kicks to a police officer?
Yes, it's always fun to beat down the,
yeah, cop.
Now, looking ahead a little bit, Mark, do you have any definite plans as far as what's going on in TKO? I mean, you were the champion there at 145. Do you know what's going to happen next? Do you have a fight coming
up? Yeah, I get a rematch. I had a rematch clause in my contract. So July 29th, I get another shot at Hatsu Hiyoki.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just doing 4 weeks away. So, you know, back Monday morning, back training hard and getting ready to prepare for this fight.
Oh, okay.
And you already got your first set of push-ups in after your fight against
Andre Hill. That's how
I exactly. Push-ups already starting the training.
Now, one other note here for maybe you can offer a little bit of insight. You know, you fought Ryan Diaz a couple times, as I mentioned earlier, and then it was just announced he's going to be fighting Uriah Faber coming up. Have you had any chance to see Uriah fight? Do you see someone as a favorite out of that fight? Who would you pick between Faber and Diaz?
Well, right now, Uriah Faber is a smashing machine right now. Mm-hmm. He's tearing up everybody in the division. So I think he's going to take it. You know, Ryan, a lot of respect for him. He's, you know, class act, but Uriah's just been on a roll. And it's going to be a tough fight for Ryan, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Uriah's wrestling is going to dictate where the fight goes, and I think he's got the juice to go whatever, five rounds, three rounds, whatever it is, to get the fight.
So one last question for me. So who do you see for yourself on the horizon? Everyone says, you know, I'll fight who's ever put it in front of me. But do you have a dream fight, either at 145 or 155, that you'd really like to see the UFC fix for you?
For the UFC, well, right now my focus is Hatsu Hiyoki, no question about it. But UFC, you know, maybe get Florian, just because, you know, I'd like to avenge the loss of Sammy.
Mm-hmm.
And really show him what Team Tong is all about. And, you know, I think that'd be a good fight, and I think Kenny thinks the same thing.
What did you think about that fight? It actually, Sam Stout, he made Sam Stout kind of look like a rank amateur with some textbook jiu-jitsu. Do you think Stout just didn't have it on that night, or is Florian really stepped up his game? There's a lot of controversy around it.
Kenny's for real, there's no question about that. I just, Sammy just came out guns a-blazing. And he got taken down right away. And when you're with a jiu-jitsu guy right at the start of the fight, and he gets in a dominant position, like the side control and the full mount, and he had the back within the first minute of the fight, you know, it's pretty tough to get out because you know you're both, and the sweat's not really involved in the fight. He's still got lots of energy, and you know the scrambles aren't really happening because he's so fresh at the start of the fight. So I just, you know, I think Sam just came out a little too quick, and we're gonna fix that, and you know. We'll get back to Sam on the winning track.
Mark, my last question for you, and then this is kind of the hot button topic that everyone seems to be talking about today on the forums and whatnot. Some controversy last night about some of the judges' decision. You know, not in reference to your fight per se, but more so with the Stephen Bonner, Rashad Evans. One judge called it a draw, and then in your other Canadian fighter, Jonathan Goulet, someone also called that fight a draw with Luke Comeau. Did you get a chance to see those fights? Do you have any opinions on, you know, how a judge can possibly call, you know, the Rashad Evans, Stephen Bonner fight a draw? I mean, do you have an opinion on that as being a fighter? Does that concern you, seeing such a kind of an aberration like that?
I the judge's decision, sometimes you look at them and you wonder where they're getting their scorecards from. But I think some judges are just looking at it from a different view. So it's got to be across the board, like so every fighter knows, you know, this is the way they're going to judge it. So I think it all depends on what the judge is looking at.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's definitely
some upset
people.
I think there needs to be some kind of, you know, they have a, you know, ring, like Octagon generalship, striking, effective grappling. But how equally they're judged, I don't know, I think some judges just see it one aspect overriding everything.
Yeah, well, there's definitely, you know, quite a few people talking about that, and like I said, you know, it's kind of a hot button topic today. But you're absolutely right, and I guess to go back to the old, it's somewhat of a cliche line, but it just holds true for any fighter not to leave it in the judge's decision.
Exactly, and that's what I said. You know, like after the fight, some people are bullying because of the judge's decision to mine, but you know, that's what happens. You should finish fight. That's the way it takes it away from worrying about judge's decision. Finish the fight. So. Most of the time, if you're doing that, you're going to win the fight anyways.
Yeah. Well, Miss Mark, thank you very much. I know it's been a busy day. I know you guys are out having a good time, and you're seeing the sights and sounds of Las Vegas. So enjoy your dinner tonight with the rest of Team Tompkins, and come back anytime, man.
Oh, great. And my best to you as well, and congratulations, and good luck in your efforts about impressing ladies with push-ups tonight. a thousand in a row might work for some of the finer women in Vegas.
Okay, Mark, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Hey guys, Kelsey Mode here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Mo must be presented in business letter format and an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Mo before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang, and you're listening to NHB News and Full Contact Fighter.
Okay, well, we're back here on the second episode now, Full Contact Fighter Radio, with Rashad Evans, fresh off his big win against Stefan Bonner. Rashad, how are you doing today, man?
I feel real good. You know, it's exciting to get that good win in there and, you know, move on to another tough fight.
Now, I got to tell you, you probably didn't hear the show. This is only our second one. But I got to be honest, and I'd be a coward if I didn't tell you this. Both Brendan and I, we had picked Stefan to win, man. And you definitely proved us wrong, and that was one of the main reasons I wanted to get you on the show. Impressive victory, man, and very impressive.
Well, yeah, a lot of people counted me out for that fight. And I knew it would be a tough fight. You know, Stefan, he's a very talented fighter, very versatile in his technique and everything like that. But I knew if I stuck with our game plan, you know, we trained, I thought I'd do fine. You know, we just come from Keith Jardine just having to fight him in our camp, so it made it a little bit, you know, easier to plan for him, you know, as far as what we wanted to do in the fight.
Now, it looked to me like the game plan obviously was to go with your takedowns. You're known for your great wrestling. Is that what you intended to do from the get-go, or were you thinking originally maybe you're going to stand with him for a bit and see how that worked out, or was it just to take it to the mat right away?
I wanted to stand with him, but I wanted to be inside close, you know. But whenever I got close, the takedown was just there for me so much. I just, you know, kept taking it. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to do a little bit more. Passing the guard and a little more ground to pound, but when I got down, when I took him down, you know, I felt that he was very tight on my arm, and I felt that he was waiting for me to try to, you know, get that space so he can come with a submission. So I kind of tightened up in there and went for the pass when it was more an opportunistic point instead of really trying to really work for it, because I think he was really looking for me to scramble so he can use his good scrambling abilities to catch me in a submission.
Right, and of course, you know, everyone knows Stefan is well known for having some good submissions in his arsenal. Did you ever feel, it didn't look to me, man, like you ever had any, you were in any real danger of getting caught with any of the submissions? He tried maybe pulling out a Kimura a couple times, but is that your thoughts too?
Yeah, he didn't really have anything, and I felt like, you know, he wasn't going to catch anything. As long as I didn't get too sloppy. He really wanted to turn into a jiu-jitsu match where I was like scrambling and rolling around trying to scramble for position, and that's where he's toughest at, you know. That's where he's real tough at. Like a couple times he tried to hit like a switch on me, and you know, a couple times he gave me his back to try to see if I go for the rear naked so then he can probably, you know, rove over on me, or you know, he tried, or maybe set up a knee bar, you know. Mm-hmm. But I felt what he was trying to do, and then I stuck with my game plan. I was just thinking, okay, you know, if he's gonna be just you know, straight wrestling and ground and pound when you get an opportunistic point of view, but I wasn't gonna try to get into the jiu-jitsu game with him.
Now, the big kind of hot hot-button topic over the last couple of days, and I'm sure you're well aware of this, is the fact that one of the judges scored a 29-29. I believe it was Dalby Shirley. What were your thoughts on that? Were you quite surprised to hear that a judge could call that fight a draw?
I was. I really was, and kind of disappointed at the same time, you know. I mean, I keep leaving them in the judge's hands, and soon enough I will lose one, mm-hmm. you know. So that for me, it was kind of more like a wake-up call, like, okay, man, you know, you gotta maybe, you know, try to finish it, you know, try to do your best, try to finish it a little more. But, I mean, Stephen's a tough guy to finish, you know. I mean, that's kind of a tall order to try to finish him off, you know. I mean, Forrest Griffin couldn't finish him off. You know, Keith couldn't finish him off. A lot of guys, you know, he's not an easy guy to finish on. So, but I mean, I leave a decision in the judge's hands long enough, and soon it probably will go the other way.
Yeah, I mean, as a fighter, I mean, obviously you're concerned, and you don't want to leave it in the judge's hands. We were talking to Mark Hominick yesterday, and he kind of made a similar comment. But I mean, it's got to concern you. I mean, there's, you know, as far as the system of how, you know, who is brought in to judge and what they know about mixed martial arts. I mean, really, if you look at that fight, I mean, how can you score it a draw? I mean, do you think that maybe it's time to sort of reevaluate how they pick their judges? Should there be a system of balance and checks for who gets to judge a mixed martial arts fight?
I definitely think so. I mean, you have these boxing judges, and they definitely look at different things because they're trained to look at different things. Mm-hmm. And you get them judging a mixed martial arts competition, and it's different. You know, they may look for more of striking or whatever that, you know, whatever boxing judges look for, and that doesn't actually translate so well when it comes to mixed martial arts all the time.
Now, earlier you mentioned Keith Jardine, and you were training with Keith for this. How much of it was it a motivating factor for you? I mean, Keith fought Stefan, and a lot of people had Stefan losing that fight. It was a tough fight. Was that a big motivating factor for you in this fight to sort of try to pull one out for Keith?
It was a big motivating factor for me. Keith did an excellent job helping me prepare for this fight. You know, he was always in my corner, you know, with training, you know, showing me the things that I can do, showing me what Stefan might do. And, you know, he was just a lot of help for this fight. And I really felt like he's been robbed. And you know, Keith is a very humble guy. So he had never come out and say, oh, I've been robbed and cheated and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's just like, yeah, whatever. You know, he kind of just took it in stride, but you could tell the guy's kind of hurt about it. So I really wanted to get it for him and for the team as well.
Now, who else helped you get ready for this fight? Tell us a little bit about the camp. You look like you're in great shape, man. You didn't look like you gassed at all. So tell us a little bit about the camp that you had for this fight.
I had Nate Marcourt, he's the 185 partner. Mm-hmm. And he came and helped me, and Keith Jardine, of course, Joey Villasenor,
yep.
Dan Christensen, and Floyd Sword. And these are just, you know, these are just a couple of the guys who just came down. But we have up and coming fighters also that was there too. So I had a really good camp, and everybody, you know, focused in on trying to make me harder, you know, tough as I can. I had a couple practices where I just walked out the room and I was just so dejected and just upset, you know, because I got my butt handed to me. But you know, that's what practice is for, you know. So you have those days where you just have an off day and you're just.
Now, you know, everyone knew you had openly told people that you're going to move down to 205 after the Ultimate Fighter experience, and now you're back at 205, obviously, and you look like you're in great shape. Do you feel like you're really settling into that weight? You have no doubts, obviously, I would assume, about moving down to light heavyweight?
Yeah, I had no doubt. I mean, I have no doubts. You know, 205 is a perfect fit for me. You know, I don't really have to cut a lot of weight, but at the same time, you know, I'm not too light, you know. I probably could make 185 if I really cut, but then I might lose other things, you know. I might lose my endurance.
Okay. Do you feel somewhat, Rashad, like you're not getting the credit that you deserve? I mean, you're undefeated. You know, do you ever think that way, that maybe you fly under the radar a little bit, or do you like sort of, you know, coming along and beating one guy at a time and maybe staying out of the spotlight a little bit?
Yeah, well, you know, at first I was kind of like a little upset about, you know, not getting the respect I deserve, but after a while I just kind of settled into it and just, you know, smiled at what the critics say and things of that nature. I mean, I enjoy flying under the radar and just taking it one fight at a time,
You know, sometimes when you get all that hype, and even if you're a humble person, you know, soon enough you start believing what everybody's telling you, and then you may lose a little bit of the edge that you had before. You know, somebody may tell you're the toughest guy at 205, and then pretty soon, you know, soon enough you're like, yeah, I am the toughest guy at 205, and you may slack on your training and things of that mid-nature. But you know, being an underdog, I guess that's just me. You know, I guess I don't know if the fans will really ever accept me as, you know everything that I'm capable of doing or for what I am. But it's just, you know, I'm just going to continue to be me. And if they like it, they like it. If they don't, then, you know, I still love them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously you've taken out a couple of the more notable light heavyweights now that the UFC has. What do you think is next for you? Has there been any talks with you yet about who they might have in store for you to fight next?
No, there hasn't been any talks with me. I don't think they really will make it past Stephen Bonner. But I don't know. I think maybe they'll shoot somebody else my way. You know, I mean, everybody I fought so far has been pretty tough. I haven't really had anybody who somebody may consider a can or somebody, you know, easy. So I really haven't had really easy fights, the guys that I was supposed to just go in there and destroy. Everybody I fought has been pretty tough, so I assume they'll continue that and bring somebody else tough again.
Final question for you, Rashad. Just tell us a little bit about your wrestling background. It seems like, you know, that I think most people would say that that's probably your best asset. You've also got some pretty solid stand-up, too, most people would say. But, yeah, tell us a little bit about your wrestling background and, you know, how did you get to the level that you have now? Because, you know, obviously it's a fairly high level, caliber of wrestling.
Well, I was all-state wrestling in high school. You know, I finished in the top four in New York State. My junior and senior year, and I went to junior college, and I was an All-American. I was a junior college national champion.
Okay.
And then from there on, I transferred to Michigan State University, and there I was a two-time Big Ten, you know, I finished in the top four in the Big Ten the two years I wrestled, and then I went to the national tournament, and I beat, the three-time national champion, Greg Jones from West Virginia.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, my wrestling career was like, you know, I can beat the best, but at the same time, turn around and lose to the worst in the weight class, you know. So I was really inconsistent, but I had a balanced potential, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely, I would say, you know, especially against Stefan, and I mean, in some of the other fights too, but against Stefan, you know, clearly the advantage there. I mean, I guess I should add as one final question, were you somewhat surprised that Stefan threw the amount of kicks that he did? Were you surprised that you had quite relative ease taking him down?
Well, yeah, I expected him to be a lot more kicks and things like that. You know, he's working with Duke Rufus, which is an excellent, mm-hmm. you know, kickboxer. And I thought he was going to come out with a lot more kicks and things like that. But whenever I was outside of his range, I was able to get his timing. You know, I was able to find his timing.
Yeah.
And then after I got his timing, then it was just automatic for me to shoot. You know, he was stepping really heavy with that jab hand, and I was just, you know, he felt really pretty slow to me. You know.
And you came.
So out, I was able to.
Sorry, and you came out completely injury free from that fight. I would take it.
Yeah, that's the best part about it. You know, I didn't have to go to the hospital. You know, last time, Hogar, he kicked me with a kick, man, and it messed my up for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of those fights you walk away with, and everybody's like, oh, man, you look like you got your ass whooped. But it's all good, though. Hogar had that kick on me.
Well, Rashad, we appreciate you coming on the show, and especially in light of the fact that, you know, you proved both Brendan and I wrong, and kudos to you, man, and all the best in the future.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks, Rashad. Well, some interesting comments, obviously, from both Mark Hominick and Rashad Evans. You know what, for a second episode, again, we're doing not bad so far. You know, Kenny Florian, Dennis Kang, episode one, and then we come back with guys who had some great performances on the weekend, Mark Hominick and Rashad Evans.
And you and I have already eaten our first crow in light of our predictions of Rashad Evans' loss.
Exactly.
Fight night.
Yeah, that didn't
so,
take long.
So hopefully there'll be a segment called Kelsey and Brendan Eat Shit every week. or something flies back in our faces.
Yeah, he was good about it. I even told him before we went on the air, you know, I said, look, I'm just going to tell you that, you know, I didn't pick you to win, and I was pretty bold about my prediction, and he just laughed. And so he was good about it, and yeah, he definitely proved us both wrong. Obviously, a huge couple of weeks coming up, and right away we've got Pride on, I guess it'll be late Friday night our time, but it'll be airing, I believe, pay-per-view on Sunday. Although here in Canada, I don't know about what it's like in Edmonton, but here in Vancouver they haven't actually posted the airtime yet for that pay-per-view.
I think that's typical and has been typical in the last pay-per-views, in my provider anyway, that, you know, I didn't know it until a day before that an event was going to be played. But I think it's... I think the time is 10 o'clock Eastern in Canada, so 8 o'clock on Sunday night.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to stay off the internet that day because I'm one of those guys. I know some people out there, especially some writers, MMA writers, they, you know, it doesn't bother them to know the results. But I gotta admit, man, I hate that. I like to go in blind. I it's way, way more entertaining for me.
If you have to pay money, I hate it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And, of course, we're not advocating anyone not paying money, are we, Brendan?
I don't even know what you mean by that, Kelsey.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's get into it. Wanderlei Silva and Fajia, I think, is probably the fight that at least people who are interested in sort of the freak show kind of side of it, of MMA, are probably excited.
It's not a freak show in the traditional sense.
No, it's not. Definitely
none not. Neither of these men have a nickname of giant.
Yeah. But still, I think you know what I'm saying. I mean, it's the one fight that sort of pops out. You know, Wanderlei's coming in. I would say not really favored to win. You know, most people, I wouldn't think. If you go back on his performances against bigger guys in the past, Mark Hunt comes to mind. I would say that people probably aren't picking Silva to win.
Are you surprised by that, Kelsey?
No, I'm not. I think he's got a shot for sure. You know, I think he's going to come in, lose. He's got nothing to lose. He had, some really stressful fights with Ricardo Arona, of course, memorable fights. And I think he's going to come in and just let the hands fly. And if he gets taken down and pounded out, then that's what's going to happen. But I think it's going to be an entertaining fight.
I personally think he has actually a lot to lose. Do you think anyone would say, oh, just because he gave up X number of pounds, 40 pounds, that he ought to have lost? You know, Silva's, before this last year, had been widely renowned as unbeatable at 205, and perhaps his future was going to be at heavyweight. So I think he's got a lot to lose in this fight. Fujita is basically gained his fame and glory in MMA anyway by throwing one punch, and that was the punch that wobbled Fedor. So it will be, I think Wanderlei has to come in with some nerves to this fight. I think he has to come in with some nerves.
I just look at it as, unless he just gets completely destroyed, which I don't think will happen, I don't think that even if he loses, if he loses by, you know, a decision or something like that, or I just don't think that, you know, anyone's going to look at it as being a reflection of his capabilities at light heavyweight. You know, I don't think that anyone, you know, you said that you thought Wanderlei, there's talk about him moving up, but I mean, I think most people would say that he's even kind of small for a light heavyweight, I'd say. You know,
yeah, I think he is a small. I think he is a small light heavyweight.
Yeah, he's not like a Tito Ortiz that cuts down. I mean, he'll be probably around 210, 215, I would guess, for this fight. But
I think he's expecting to fight at 215, is what I read.
Yeah, and then, of course, you've got the Crow Cop, Yoshida fight. Brendan, do you think Yoshida's got a chance to win this fight? Do you think he's got a legitimate chance to win?
Yoshida seems to be a man of equilibrium, in that he's never really dogged up a fight, and then he's never really risen to the occasion in MMA. And you know, he's held in a couple times against Silva again, and I don't think anyone ever gave him a hope in hell to stand in against Silva. You know, someone who obviously had the power to knock him out and knock him senseless off his feet. And he's been very tenacious against that great striker. So we'll see. I think if he can shoot and take Krokop down. I think one of the advantages he might have against Krokop is that Krokop his ground game is influenced heavily by Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, of course. Verdum, his coach, and I think a judo player might have a different look to Crow Cop, especially taking him down from the clinch. We saw one of the best judo players in Fedor actually not doing that much. So I don't know why we would think that that one of the best MMA appliers of judo anyway. We didn't do that much against Crow Cop, so I'm not sure if that will be more effective with Yoshida or not.
Yeah, I think that, you know, with Yoshida, that his main chance to get Crow Cop to the ground will probably only be from the clinch. I think Crow Cop's sprawl is pretty damn good at this point. And, we saw it against, you know, some guys like Mark Coleman, that he's tough to get down from the shot. So I think the only chance he does of getting Crow Cop to the ground is from the clinch. And I think he's going to have a lot of trouble getting to that point. I think with Fedor, his stand-up capabilities are just so far and beyond Yoshida's, obviously, that you saw that, obviously, as a part of his game plan, of Fedor's game plan. And, Yoshida, does he have a chance to submit Crow Cop? Yeah, of course. You know, maybe he can get him down on the ground and submit him, but I don't see Yoshida winning this fight.
I see either a very, very boring, long, dragged-out affair on the ground, maneuvering for position, or a devastating highlight reel knockout via left kick to the head.
Now, Josh Barnett, Mark Hunt, I think that this fight, as far as looking at matchups, evaluating skill, and from a fight from that point of view, I think is probably drawing a lot of attention. There's a lot of excitement behind Mark Hunt. He's done very well in mixed martial arts so far. Brennan, do you think, who are you picking between Josh Barnett and Mark Hunt?
I have to take Josh Barnett. You know, everyone, I think Hunt's obvious weakness has only been tested once, and that was by Yoshida in Hunt's first MMA fight. And I don't think he's had the time, nor maybe if we've even witnessed has had the inclination to improve his ground game or even his ground defense. You would assume that he had, but I don't think we've seen that been tested. And I think Barnett is savvy enough just really not to want to stand with Hunt. He has no reason to, and he certainly has all the skill to be able to take Hunt down. So we'll see. I think that will be the first 5 minutes of the fight will be the test for a test of Hunt's newly acquired or non-acquired ground skills.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you. To say that Barnett, you know, might not want to stand with him. I mean, he shouldn't. I was somewhat surprised that he stood with Alexander Emelianenko as much as he did.
As was I, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I think as long as he gets it through his head that he's got, you know, the clear-cut advantage taking it to the ground and tries to do that, then I completely agree. I think Josh Barnett will probably get the win. But, you know, if he tries making the mistake of standing with him and proving something to the fans, he's in for a short night, I would think. And then the next fight, of course, is Antonio Nogueira versus Fabricio Werdum. And, Brennan, who are you picking for this? Do you, you know, two Brazilian jiu-jitsu experts, Who are you favoring?
I'm surprised actually at how much of a favorite Nogueira is. I think he's probably the most complete fighter in the tournament, so I'm not surprised. I wouldn't have been surprised if he was a favorite, but he's by far the greatest favorite in terms of odds makers. Now, I know that doesn't really reflect anything. It just as a means to facilitate betting on the fight. But I was on the Overeem bandwagon, and I haven't jumped off yet, but I was very impressed with his first fight, and, it seems these every up-and-comer and apparent challenger to the heavyweight belt has been eliminated by the next, so, Overeem's big win and is sort of rolling, and then Werdum beats him.
Yeah.
It'll be very interesting to see. I think Verdum's proven himself to be game, certainly a game striker. He stood a lot with Overeem, And, you know, he's obviously a game on the ground. So we'll see. This could be, I think this could be one of the best technical fights that we may see in this tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just look at it as Nogueira's stand-up is as good as Verdum's, if not better. And, you know, Nogueira, if you look at some of the guys he's fought who have great stand-up, Fedor, Krokop, etc., he hasn't been knocked out. And I just don't see Verdum coming up with a solution, you know, coming up with a way to win this fight. I don't think you can say, honestly, that he has a realistic chance at submitting Nogueira. And I don't think you can say he's got a great chance at knocking him out or stopping him. So for that reason, I'm going to go with Nogueira.
I think, well, it's tough to go against Nogueira. I think it will be... Verdum is certainly in tough, and we'll see. I think it'll be an entertaining fight, though. I don't think it will be an open and close case.
Yeah, and just to let everybody know here, if you look at the favorites or as far as the odds, Silva is favored, Krokop, Barnett, and Nogueira are all the favorites, and you're right, Nogueira is by far the most heavily favored as far as that goes. And then if you just look at the non-tournament bouts really quickly, were you surprised at all Vitor Belfort coming off what many had said was a lackluster performance against Overeem in the recent show in California? Were you surprised that Pride picked him up and signed him, and he's fighting Takahashi? Were you surprised in that signing?
Something must have been in the works before that fight, and although that fight wasn't on television, and I wasn't in California to see it, I somehow saw it. I'm not sure exactly how, but yeah, it was a terrible fight. It was very unimpressive in both fighters' behalfs, and Vitor claims to have been injured in that fight. So this will be an interesting question: whether if that injury was, I believe, it was a hamstring injury, if it was a serious injury, and whether or not he's had time to recover and train to be ready for this fight. I'm not sure, and to be quite honest, I'm not very familiar with his opponent. So we'll see. This is an enigma to me, but I'm not sure. Vitor. It seems like for the last 3 years we've been singing Vitor's death knell, and he's still not dead. So I don't know what kind of resiliency the man has.
Yeah, I would.
He certainly got something to prove.
Absolutely, and you would think if he loses to Takahashi that probably, you know, could be the end of the line for him. You know, he's lost four of his last five fights, so he definitely, this is a must win for him. And then another fight, I think, that is of some great interest is Antonio Ruggiero Nogueira, the brother of Nogueira, the heavyweight Nogueira, is fighting Alistair Overeem, and that's going to be a great fight too. Who do you think is going to pull that one out?
I think I see it going very much the same way that their first fight did. I don't think either fighter has changed very much. Little Nog hasn't fought in Pride actually for a long time, and I think he's hungry to work his way back into the mix, and I can't see it working out much differently. And as a matter of fact, if anything has surprised me as of late, it's how unimpressive Overeem stand-up has been.
Yeah.
So I don't see it working out much differently.
If memory serves me, and I could be wrong, is Little Nog's last fight might have been against Mauricio Rua. The fight last year was an unbelievable fight when Shogun sort of shocked the world and ended up winning the middleweight Grand Prix. Is that his last fight? Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting matchup. I agree with you, though. I think Ruggiero Nogueira will probably come away with the win. But, for, you know, absolutely, Alistair's got a shot. And if he wins, you know, that puts him back in the mix in Pride. And that's some interesting
exactly. You know, I think he looked great at heavyweight. And I thought it was remarkable that he could actually make 205 because he's physically so big. Mm-hmm. And I think, if anything, you know, the key, the, you know, the his... his lackluster performance has got to be due to his refusal to now carry in his giant Conan the Barbarian smashing hammer.
Yeah, you know, you got to think that's got a really help a guy build up his muscular fiber, and I agree with you, man. Is that a Homeland Security thing?
Are you not allowed to carry a gigantic hammer on a wooden hammer on planes anymore?
Do you have to buy an extra seat for it,
or you check it through luggage? I'm not exactly sure how you take a giant hammer abroad. But
well, we should try getting him on the show and asking him.
We will.
Yeah. Well, Brennan, I think that's going to be it. Thank you again for taking some time out. And, yeah, next week, obviously, some big stuff happening. We'll talk about Pride and as well the UFC is coming up next on July 8th. So plenty to talk about. And again, man, thanks for coming on the show.
Episode number 3 is guaranteed to be a smash. It will be interesting to see what fills the Kelsey and Brendan Eat Shit segment, but I'm sure there will be at least a few entries under that. And hopefully we can develop a core of enemies with our constant disrespecting of them in terms of professional fighters.
Yeah, I'm sure that's already well underway. Okay, man, we'll take care and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.